To start off tonight, we have quite a few new people on the rack, and I'm new at the position of chair. So to start, we'd like to go down and have everyone introduce, and then what position you are, where you live, and we'll start there. Tammy, do you want to get us going? All right, we'll start with Verl.
Verlin King, representing agriculture, and I live in Bicknell, Utah.
Tammy Pearson, elected official, Beaver County.
Craig Lobb, agriculture from Iron County.
Chad Utley, at large from St. George.
Push that.
Yeah, push that.
So,
yep. Right there?
Yep, don't turn green.
Okay. Chad Utley, at large, from St. George.
Nick Jorgensen, non-consumptive out of St. George.
Again, I'm Braden Richmond. This will be the first meeting I've been the chairman. I have represented the sportsman.
Kevin Bunnell, I'm the regional supervisor for the Division of Wildlife in the Southern Region.
Sean Stewart, representing BLM for the Southern Region out of Escalante.
Gene Boardman from Hinckley, representing public at large.
I'm Bart Batista from Kanab, representing non-consumptive.
While we're waiting on Riley to sit down, we'll introduce the Chad and
construction.
It's always construction. It's all right. I was late at our last meeting. Chad and Brad are the new members. Bart are the new members on the rack. So welcome and. Again, please chime in. You're on the rack to have opinions and voice your opinions, so jump right in. We're missing tonight Austin Atkinson. He is the sportsman's rep, right?
No, he's at large.
At large. Austin Atkinson will be at large. He's not with us tonight, but he's promised to be at the next meeting. So we'll jump right into the first item on here, the first action item. We need to accept the rack minutes, agenda, and minutes. So we'll entertain a motion on that.
I make a motion that we accept the minutes as written.
And the agenda.
And the agenda as well. Thank you, Kevin.
Okay, we've got a motion. And Riley has seconded it. Any comments? All in favor?
Aye.
You guys have it?
Okay, unanimous.
All right. We'll jump right into the second one. On the second one, it's the Wildlife Board meeting update. Usually we have a little bit of information on these, but this last board meeting was fairly straightforward. It was on the turkeys, the turkey transplant list, the CIP, and what was the one other item on there?
I think that was it.
And we really didn't have a lot of recommendations. The board passed it as presented, and so we'll just leave it at that for the board meeting update. I'll turn it over to Kevin for the regional update.
Okay, thank you, Braden. I'd also like to welcome Bart and Chad and let you know a little bit the process that we went through to select them, the two of them and Austin. Riley and Braden and I interviewed several people for each of the seats that we had open with phone interviews, and Austin Atkinson from Cedar City and Chad and Bart that are here made it a pretty easy choice for us in selecting them. You'll notice that our rack is a little bit smaller. We had five people leave. We only replaced them with three. Hopefully it's a little bit more manageable for setting up our venues for Phil and his crew and having enough microphones to go around, and I think the public will still be well represented. So appreciate your guys' willingness to serve along with the other RAC members, and look forward to getting to know you better and working through some issues. As far as a regional update, from our aquatics section. If you've been up to Fish Lake recently within the last couple of weeks, you've noticed there's a lot of heavy equipment rolling around up there. We've started reconstructing the marinas up there. That'll be a 3 to 5 year project, and at the end of it, Fish Lake will be a different place. The marinas will be much more user-friendly for the boats that people are using now versus the boats that were being used 70 years ago when those marinas were first put in terms of being big, deeper, larger slips, easier to get to maneuver boats, and just larger in general. And so we look forward to continuing to work with the Forest Service and our funding partners on that. Our aquatic section is also working on developing in coordination with the outreach section and Phil's crew, a stream fishing video. We have some fabulous stream fishing in southern Utah that goes very underutilized, and so they're trying to drum up some attention there and make people more aware of that resource. The aquatics folks netted the kokanee at Fish Lake today. I haven't had a chance to get a report back. Jim, how did it go?
Great populations of fish are in awesome shape.
Okay. You'll remember that it's about 3 years ago that we first put kokanee into Fish Lake as a new resource there, and that seems to be working very well. And then another bit of kind of exciting news, with our surveys of the lakes on the Boulder Mountain this year, we had less winter kill than we expected, particularly given the heavy winter. I think I've mentioned before that we've been doing some experimentation on some of the lakes on the Boulder Mountain, putting some aerators in that are solar powered. They run through the winter and keep some oxygen or oxygen levels better in some of those lakes. It's too early to say that that's completely making the difference, but certainly the data we have right now is promising. And if we can overwinter fish on some of those lakes on the Boulder, they're so productive that they grow big fish in a hurry if we can just help them survive the winter. And so we'll keep working on that, and that's exciting. From our wildlife section, I mentioned at our last meeting that we were interviewing a new biologist for our Panguitch district, Mike Wardle. Mike, do you want to stand up? A lot of you will recognize Mike. Mike was in the region prior a couple years ago, and then he went up to Salt Lake, and he was serving as the private lands public wildlife coordinator and came to his senses and came back down to southern Utah and is now our biologist in Panguitch. We've been having a few bear conflicts around the region. We've had a couple of bears that have actually been killed by the public in conflicts, and one that we've had to remove, and then some others that we've been dealing with. So any chance you get to remind people about keeping camps clean and those sorts of things makes our life easier when it comes to dealing with bears. And the biologists right now are in the middle of their elk classifications, probably close to wrapping those up, but that's what's been keeping the biologists busy lately. Within our habitat section, the funding decisions are out for WRI for the next year. And within the southern region, we have 69,000 acres and about $4.5 million worth of projects that are approved to be done within the next about 8 to 10 months. Our habitat section, along with the partners in the Forest Service and the BLM, are extremely successful at going after that money. We typically get about a third of the money that's allocated throughout the state and do somewhere between a third and half of the acres treated, and that's no different this year. Law enforcement, we also have some new faces there. I think Greg Baird is here. Greg, would you stand up? Greg's our new officer in Millard County. You'll see he has a couple of babysitters with him tonight, and he'll continue with somebody at his shoulder for the next little while. We also have a new officer in Beaver County, Jeremy Butler, and a new officer in Kane County, Thomas Six, and they're both in the middle of their field training, part of their training right now. AIS, or all the quagga mussel issues, have kept us really busy with our law enforcement section this year. There's a lot of news articles that have been written on that. What was happening this year is, as the water in Lake Powell came up, it came up about 40 feet higher this year than it was last year, and you had all those essentially dead mussels that were, as the water came up, they came out into the channel, and every boat that was coming off of Lake Powell, specifically, particularly at Antelope Point, was covered in shells. And we have no idea at that point, or no way to tell whether they're alive or dead, and we have to treat everything as if they're alive, and that really slowed things down and created a tremendous amount of work at Lake Powell. That problem seems to have mitigated itself, and we're kind of back at normal business, but there was about a 3 or 4 week period there when we weren't sure if we were going to survive the summer, but luckily that's abated. In our outreach section, many of you know Heather Talley. She has left. She's gone the opposite of what Mike did, and she has accepted a job in the Salt Lake office as our new Upland Game Coordinator. So we'd congratulate her. Really busy time of year with dedicated hunters, and we have a lot. We have more and more dedicated hunters every year, and this is the time when they're looking for hours so they can get their tags, and so that's been keeping them very busy. The outreach section also did a field dressing clinic on Saturday that went really well, and with a lot of partners that helped there. And then just two more notes on from our admin services folks. Any bull permits. Elk permits this year sold out in 11 days. It wasn't very long ago when you could buy one of those permits up to the week before the hunt started. Probably 3 years ago that was possible. This year they sold out in 11 days. Just another example of the demand that's out there for people to go hunting. There are about 7,500 spike permits left. So if you're wanting to hunt elk this fall, that's your opportunity. And that's all I have, Mr. Chairman, unless we have questions.
Thank you. We'll turn it over to Darren to present on the bobcat harvest recommendations.
Good evening, everybody. I'm glad to be here again. I'll be presenting our recommendations for bobcat and for fur bear first tonight. Quickly, I just want to kind of go through the background on how we manage bobcats in the state. We do this every year, just so we're kind of starting all on the same page. In Utah, we have a bobcat management plan that regulates how I don't know what I'm trying to say. Anyway, it helps us to make decisions with regard to permits and season lengths. And the plan sets out three management criteria, and we'll kind of go through these. What I'll do is I'll explain what the criteria is, and then we'll look at some data. So the first is we want to manage for the number of juveniles in our bobcat harvest to be between 42 and 56%. The idea here is that most people take bobcats with traps. You tend to catch bobcats as they occur, as the population occurs on the landscape. And so if we keep those numbers between 42 and 56%, that indicates that production is going on. It would indicate a healthy or growing bobcat population. In the plan, there's a maximum opportunity threshold that's defined, and that would be 6 permits per individual, with a unlimited number of total permits available in the state, and then a generous season that begins in November and runs through the spring. And so if we're meeting that criteria, then that's where we'd stay. That's kind of the baseline. So here's how those numbers look. So this is from 1999 through last season. The red dotted line here is the lower threshold. That's the number we want to be above. The green line is the upper end of that threshold, so we're managing to be between those two lines. But this year we actually dropped below it. We're kind of heading that direction for a couple of years, and this year we dropped below that number. The second criteria in the plan is to manage for adult survival between 65 and 72%. And the idea here is that we want to make sure that those adults are surviving, and then they can reproduce, and that population then will maintain itself. So again, if it's higher than the maximum or within the threshold, we would allow for that maximum opportunity. But if it gets below that, we'd need to look, potentially look at changes to the season. So here's the data on that. Again, the same time period. We're shooting to be in between those lines, but last year we were actually below. Some of you, I'm sure, remember the management threshold. This year we're still below, but we did uptick a little bit, but it is outside of the management objective. The final criteria are the percent females in the harvest. In this case, we're trying to manage for that number to be between 41 and 45%. And if it's lower than 45, that's where we would allow for maximum opportunity. That just indicates that, we're not taking a lot of females and that they're out there to reproduce. And so this is kind of a flip of the other two. So in this case, we don't want to be above that upper bound. That would indicate we're taking too many females. And so you can see the data again, the same time period. And this one is outside of the management criteria as well. So for all three parameters, last year one was out. This year all three are outside of the management parameter. The plan is really clear about what we do when this happens. If two of them are outside of the performance targets, we'll recommend a reduction in permits per individual or shorten the season. If all three parameters are outside the performance targets, then we'll also cap the total number of permits at 80% of last year's sales. And in this case, all three are out. So our recommendation this year for this upcoming season is to reduce the total number of bobcat permits per individual from 6 to 5. To shorten the bobcat season on the front end so it'd start a week later in the year. So a week shorter, but that week would be on the front end. And then finally, to cap the total number of permits available at 80% of last year's sales, which is 6,460. Really quickly, we know that bobcat populations fluctuate. They fluctuate with their prey base, and as rabbit numbers fall, you just kind of get this cycling through the years. And so the plan is sensitive to that. So as we see those downturns in population numbers, we reduce opportunity. But as they come back up, then we go back and adjust that opportunity as well. So we're on a downswing, and we're going to make some adjustments just to make sure we don't overharvest. We're being a little bit conservative. We're only shortening things by one permit 1 week, and we'll look at it next year if we need to reduce further. If we're still outside, then we'll do that. That's the plan. On the other hand, if things look better, then we'll come back with a different recommendation. And then finally, just for the other fur-bearing species, these are the season date recommendations. These are just adjusted for the calendar year, so there aren't any changes here from last year other than just adjusting that September opener for the calendar. That's all I have.
Thanks, Darren. So just a reminder to everybody, I guess, we'll do questions from the rack, and then we'll have questions from the public. This will be just questions, and then we'll go into comments. So let's start with questions from the rack.
Comment cards.
Oh, and if you have any comment cards, please hand those in, and we'll bring them up front. In order to make a comment, we need to have a comment card filled out. So questions from the rack.
Darren, I appreciate your presentation. And the only question I have is just a curiosity more than anything. Uh-huh. You talked about the proportion of females in the harvest and just the number's too high.
Right.
What actual number does that represent in terms of the number? I mean, in order to figure the percentage, you had to know the number that were harvested, right?
Right, yeah. Every bobcat that's harvested in the state has to be checked by us. so we see every animal. And so, again, these are numbers that come into our offices and then we check. Does that answer your question?
I just wondered what the actual number was, or at least
the total?
Yeah.
Harvest? I can look that up.
I'm just curious.
Yeah, I'll get it for you tonight.
Any other questions from the rack?
This is just a...
Sorry.
That was powerful.
I've got a buzzer over here. You can't.
That's probably... Yeah. I should have expected that.
Make sure that's on.
It's still on. Yeah, it's on. Okay. It's glaring at me. So just a question coming from a range person. Is this also in sync with, like, the drought and that, too? I mean, I obviously, everything that we do with wildlife or livestock or whatever is, you know, dependent on the weather. And
yeah. Weather drives a lot of this, but it's weather, but it's based on prey. And so, you know, as we see rabbit, you know, the drought affects rabbit numbers or prey numbers. We'd see bobcat numbers fluctuate that way. And the total last year, Nick, was... 1,652 total bobcats taken.
Wow.
Wow.
Yeah. I don't know what percentage of that.
The average, so this long-term average since the early 90s is about 1,700, so it's below the long-term average. Yeah.
So, pardon any ignorance.
You're fine.
Can you hear me? So pardon any ignorance I may show. So I was, you know, reviewing the management plan, just kind of a quick overview of it.
Sure.
And it says that, you know, populations were determined through some studies that are pretty old.
Yeah.
All right. And so when we look at your two metrics, one is adult survivorship.
Mm-hmm.
I mean... If those are trend data from, you know, 30 years ago,
it's based on the harvest each year, and it's a chi-square analysis, so you're looking at, you know, your expected population compared to what you actually see,
okay.
and that's how that's calculated. So the calculation is up to date, but these plans, we always look at them, and if it looks like there's some things that need some tweaking, we would. But that's how that metric is calculated.
Right. I mean, so it's an analysis using old data as your initial starting point.
Right.
Is there any plan ever to, you know, do a statewide census or survey or something like that?
We don't have any concrete plans, but I think it would serve us well to be looking at possibilities. You know, bobcats are hard to count.
Yeah.
And so these metrics are sort of a way to get at numbers with numbers that we have. But there has been some interest from the Trappers Association to maybe look at having USU or one of the universities kind of see if they can, with some of the new technology, I think probably camera trapping grids, maybe get... See if we can get some other methodologies, and we'd be interested in looking at that.
Yeah, thank you.
I just have a question on this. As I look at these charts, they kind of zigzag up and down.
Yeah.
And over time, and is that the result of this management plan? So have you put similar proposals in place before, and they've gone up, and then...
Yeah, they do. I think largely bobcat populations just kind of fluctuate, and this harvest is, even though it seems like a lot, is relatively low number of animals compared to the number that are on the landscape. But we have had fewer permits in the past, and I think as recently as, I want to say 5 years ago, I think there was three. Kevin might know, it was like three per person. So we have been quite a bit lower than we are now, and this plan... Actually, I think raised the threshold, allowed people to have more tags with the understanding that we'd be sensitive to those swings and try to reduce it when we needed to.
Okay, thank you.
Darren?
Yeah, absolutely.
I think it would be an error to think that our management is driving those populations. The management plan is set up so that when we have these natural fluctuations and it's in a downward trend, that we don't drive it deeper than it would have gone anyway. So we back off, allow the natural processes to take place, and let it start swinging back upwards. On the upper end, we're just, there's plenty of opportunities. So we try to provide the opportunity. But on as when we're in a downward trend like we are right now, by us backing off, we're probably not influencing that population in any other way other than not driving it lower than it was going to go just as it follows the rabbit populations. Does that help, Chad?
Thanks, Lawson.
Okay, thank you.
Thanks, Kevin.
There's no other questions. Let's entertain questions from the public. If you can come up to the mic and make sure to state your name.
Make sure it's on, John.
And just a quick comment. Remember, this is questions. We'll do comments following this.
On it. I've noticed, and I've trapped most all my life, and the last 5 years, I've found more coyotes, cougars, and bear in the same area where I've been trapping my bobcats, and my bobcat numbers have dropped probably almost 40%. Mm-hmm. And I put a lot of time in. I mean, I'm on that mountain 48 hours every week or every time cycle. And I'm finding from the top of our Slana Canyon into the bottom that this roller coaster has really magnified itself, where there's a heavy coyote population and lions, the bobcat population is down. And on the chain of food, fox, bobcat, coyote, lion, bear, and wolf. Mm-hmm. And you can run that pretty well wherever you're at. But thank you, gentlemen, I have my time.
Did you have a question?
Question is there, I've trapped with 3 permits, I've trapped with 5 permits, I've trapped with open permits back in the 60s, and the thing I see that we have problems with, and the only way I can see to rectify that problem is to put a cap on the top of permits, because family members, like I've trained my kids how to trap. Every trapper has friends or one of them that helped learn how to trap. We've got more trappers. They're spending more money for 6 tags. And then normally, if they get 3, maybe 4, they've had a good season. And so we're taking the same amount of cats. We're putting more money out. But when we capped it with 3 tags, everybody thought that was a hardship, but I think that's one way that if we're going to stabilize our bobcat population, that would be one way, and then I'd put a bigger bounty on the coyote. Thank you, gentlemen.
Okay, just a reminder, this is questions. Do we have any more questions from the public? We'll do comments after the questions. Okay, let's go to comments from the public. We only have one person that one comment on this, and it's Ronnie Hunt. Remember, Ronnie, if you can state your name when you stand up there. Okay. And we have just one more comment on this. We have 3 minutes. Unless you're a member of an organization, then it's 5 minutes.
Okay, thank you. I'm Ronnie Hunt. I represent the Utah Trappers Association. I'm the president, and we're on board with the Bobcat Management Plan. We support the data that's been presented here this evening, and we support the proposed recommendations as presented by Darren. Thank you.
Thanks, Ronnie. And then J.J. Brewer.
J.J. Brewer, just representing myself, previously asked for a Houndsman Fur Bears license, if that would be something we could look into, if that was a possibility, someone who was not interested in trapping but using their hounds to pursue bobcats. Talked a little bit about that last year. I'm curious if anything came of that. I know we brought it up. And
You can pursue bobcats with hounds.
But not, I have to take a trapping course first, correct, Aaron?
I think so, yeah.
So my question last year was, and our question was, would it be possible to come up with a fur bearer's license for houndsmen that don't take a trapping course who... Essentially, I will never trap or half trap.
Yeah.
I'm super happy for guys that do it.
It's a good time to talk about it. That's something that have to go through the legislature. And
right.
Permit. But let's get together and talk about
okay.
it.
Okay. Thank you.
Okay. Next, we'll have comments from the RAC. Before we go to that, Darren, could you clarify for me? You just made a comment that would have to go through the legislature.
Yeah,
so it's not something that we would even make a recommendation
right.
on here,
recommend
right?
You could recommend to the board, but any new permits or fee changes, that all has to be approved by the legislature. So,
okay, because I do remember that comment last year, but
yeah.
I don't recall any action taking place on it, and maybe that's why.
I can sit down with the houndsman and see if there's something we can work
on. Okay.
It makes sense that if they're not using traps, that they probably don't need to take trapper education, but I'd like to sit down and have a discussion rather than try and decide tonight. So.
Great. Thank you. Comments from the RAC. Okay.
Okay. Did I hear you right? You said they harvested 1,652.
That's correct. Yeah.
And you're capping the permits for this year at 6,460.
Right.
Which is 80%
of last
year. So there was more last year. And,
right.
And so you're not even harvesting 25% of what your tags, you're selling tags for. How much the tag cost?
I'd have to, 15? 15 apiece, yeah.
Pretty lucrative deal there. That's all I've got.
But Verlin, you also have to remember that average price for selling a bobcat pelt's often around $400 a piece, and so I would say they're getting a pretty good deal too at times.
If there's no other comments, we can entertain a motion.
I'll make that motion to accept the recommendations.
Second.
We have a motion and a second. Motion by Tammy and a second by Vernon. Any other discussions? Okay.
Can we make a recommendation that you're looking at some new census methodology?
Yeah, you can make an amendment to the motion.
Or just make that as a comment afterwards.
A comment afterwards.
A comment afterwards. Okay. So we have a motion on the table and no additional discussion. Let's have a vote.
All in favor?
Okay, thank you. And then, Bart, you had an additional comment there.
My comment is that on, Bart. Sorry.
My comment was that, you know, we're using old data to extrapolate to current populations, and I think we may want to look into doing some sort of new survey working with USU or somebody to get new population data.
Do you want to comment on that, and then I can as well, Darren?
Yeah, I mean, I'm open to looking into to working with the university on something like that. Yeah, I think you know the data again. The data is current, but we don't manage based on a population estimate. But anything we can learn about these animals, the better. It really helps us in the long run. So yeah, I'm open to that.
Yeah, and Bart, we're always open to research, and that's why we got into this profession. It's we enjoy it, but in terms of the plan is set up to detect trends rather than a population, and what's driving those trends. Even though that data was collected back in the mid 90s and early 90s, what's driving those trends probably hasn't changed. And so we feel pretty confident that we're able to detect whether the population's going up or down. And that's about as sensitive as we can get with bobcats, unfortunately, just because of their nature.
Okay, Darren, we'll turn it over to you for the next cougar recommendations.
Okay, moving right along. I'm going to do something similar here to what we just did with bobcats. Just quickly, some background on cougar management in the state and how we do that. First of all, the recommendations you'll see tonight are all based on the Utah Cougar Management Plan and the objectives set forth in that plan. And so that plan guides our decisions at a district biologist level as far as what we would do on an individual hunting unit. So that plan was developed by the Cougar Advisory Group. It's available online, or I could make a copy available if anybody's interested in that, hasn't seen it yet. But it was a group that represented, to the best of our ability, stakeholders from all the various groups that we hear from each year regarding mountain lions. And so we had agriculture interest, hunters, houndsmen, non-consumptive representatives. So it was a fairly broad-based group. And the intention there is to try to come up with some compromises and a plan that people can agree will achieve the goal in the plan. The goal is to maintain a healthy cougar population within their current distribution while considering human safety, economic concerns, and other wildlife species, and maintaining hunting traditions. And we define in the plan a healthy cougar population as one that maintains a reasonable proportion of older age animals, breeding females, healthy individuals, and a population in balance with natural prey and genetic variability. So that's what we're shooting for. So how do we get to there? We have some management parameters that we manage to try to achieve that goal. The first and most important parameter in the plan are the number of females in the harvest, similar to the bobcat plan. We want to try to keep that number below 40%, and what we're doing is compiling the harvest data over a three-year period. So for every 3 years, the data is averaged over 3 years to try to smooth out the variance from year to year. That 40% is key. It can change depending on whether or not there's a predator management plan in place on a given unit. I'll explain what a predator management plan is and how a unit might qualify for that here in a second. That would change where you wanted to be with regards to that 40% female. The second parameter in the plan are the percent of adults 5 years and older. So this is getting at that age class. We want to make sure there's sufficient numbers of older age class animals in the population. And again, averaged over 3 years, and we're trying to manage between 15 and 20%. The way that we hunt cougars, we have three hunt strategies and then a season called a pursuit season. The first is a limited entry season, so you'll see this on your summary sheets. That's where a certain number of permits are issued, say 10. 10 people put in through a public draw, they can draw those permits. There's a season. If they fill the permits or don't fill the permits, the hunt ends when the season ends. So you may or may not fill all of those permits, but the hunt would end. I'm going to skip one because we're going to extremes and then splits kind of a combination of the two. Harvest objective units are ones where we set a quota. So again, if in this case the 10 would be a quota and the season would be open, and once 10 mountain lions were taken off that unit, the unit would close, or when the season ends, the hunt would be over, depending on which comes first. Split units are a combination. They start out as limited entry. So in this, again, 10 permits would be issued to people who draw them. At the end of that limited entry season, if there are any permits unfilled, that new number would become a quota on the unit. The unit would open, say two remain, and once those two additional lions were taken off the unit, the hunt would close. Or this, if the season ended. And then pursuit is just the opportunity for people to pursue cougars with dogs, but they can't kill a lion at the end of the pursuit. They have to release it once they tree it. So quickly, predator management plans. We recognize in the plan that cougar habitat is deer habitat once removed, largely. So cougars are dependent on what's going on with their prey base. And in some cases, we have concerns about what might be going on with prey species. And the two in the plan that are identified are mule deer populations and bighorn sheep populations. And we can go into more detail if there are questions, but if mule deer populations or bighorn sheep populations on a given unit meet criteria set forth in the plan that would indicate that that population is declining, and we determine that predation is a primary cause of that decline, or at least significantly contributing to that decline, then we would implement a 3-year predator management plan where the goal is to actually reduce the density of mountain lions on that unit. And there are some units, as we go through the unit by unit stuff, you'll see which ones currently fall under predator management. For bighorn, that's particularly concerning because the numbers of bighorn tend to be small, and one or two lions that key in on a bighorn population can actually do quite a bit of damage in a short amount of time. And so we're very sensitive to those populations, that especially the ones that they haven't quite reached 125, which is sort of a minimum viable population for bighorns. We'll look at a few data slides here. What this slide shows is since 2004, what our population trends have been with mule deer, which is the orange line, and adult, 2-year-old and older mountain lions. We feel like we've seen an increase in the number of lions over that period of time. It seems to be tracking pretty well with a similar increase in mule deer. So food increases, lions can be more productive, and we have seen an increase. Last year we actually saw a little bit, it looked like it took a little bit of a downturn, but it bounced right back. So we've talked about in the past, this is a population reconstruction based on actual animals that we check. So these are the harvested animals that come. We back calculate ages, 5-year-old that died this year would have been 4 the year before, so on and so forth. And this is based on a statewide average. So population number here is a minimum adult population, but the trend would carry through regardless of if there's an additional percent of natural mortality, which we know they are. So we feel pretty confident about the trend, but be cautious about hanging your hat on that number. This is a representation of harvest of reported mortality. So this includes hunter take, which is the blue line since 2009, so for the last decade. The orange line includes any cougar that we're made aware of that's died on the landscape, whether it's a Wildlife Services take or a highway mortality, cougar gets hit by a car, or any other reason, or a landowner takes a lion in their sheep. Anything else we're aware of, so that's how those two compare. The trends hold pretty consistent through time, and the difference between hunter harvest and those other causes is fairly consistent, even with an increase in the number of animals that have been taken. This is an illustration of where we've been since 1990 with regards to that 40% female in the harvest. This current plan was implemented in 2015, so that's when that kicked in. But over time, we've at least recently remained below that objective on a statewide basis. We had a pretty high lion population in the late 90s and early 2000s. And we did get above that line a little bit. But again, this parameter is something in some of the newer plans. So, but that's how it's looked over time. So we'll get to recommendations. Just a quick summary of what I'm going to recommend tonight. First of all, I'll present the unit recommendations. And what I've done this year is something a little bit different. We talked about these categories, whether they're under predator management or where they fall with in terms of the objectives. And so rather than a region by region, you usually do all the units in a region and kind of go through. I've split them into categories, and I've identified what the biologists' options are according to the plan. So hopefully that'll help the RAC kind of see what our biologists see, and you'll see as we go through how that works. Overall, we're recommending an increase in permits and quota by 34. We're also recommending that, similar to the bear, we go to a three-year recommendation cycle. I'll explain why we think that that would be a good idea. And then finally, we have two proposed rule changes. So beginning with, this is the unit-by-unit stuff. So this first category is, these are units that are under predator management plans for deer or bighorn sheep. Under predator management, we want to manage for more than 40% females in the harvest. These units all are meeting that criteria. So you'll see the unit, the percentage of females. This is a three-year percent of harvest over 3 years. The permit numbers for last year, the permit numbers we're recommending this year, and then the hunt type. There's only one change here to hunt type on the Ogden. That was a split unit. We're recommending that go back to, or go to harvest objective. And then there's a plan action column. The plan action column is the option that a biologist has in the plan to adjust for if we meet these criteria. So in this case, the plan says if you're above 40% females and you're under predator management, you maintain your permit numbers. And so that's what all these units are doing, maintaining. These units are not under predator management, and they're exceeding the 40% females in the harvest. And in the objective, in the plan action, the plan says if you're in this category, you need to decrease the number of permits. So we're recommending decreases on these three units. The next category, these units are under predator management for either bighorn or mule deer, but they're not meeting that above 40% females in the harvest. They should be shooting for that. And so the options to the biologist is either to maintain the current number of permits or increase the number of permits. We're recommending increases on all of these units except the Book Cliffs. The Book Cliffs have been just not quite hitting their quota, and they're almost at 40, so they felt like they'd maintain out there. And then this is the same category. These are just additional units. Where you don't see increases, it's primarily a quota. They're under harvest objective. They're not currently harvesting the quota that's set, and so there's not a whole lot of point. If you're curious about which units those are, we can look at that. We are recommending an increase of 10 on the Wasatch Mountains of Aviniquin wildcat. This category, they're meeting their female. There's no predator management plan in place. They're below 40% on their females in the harvest. So now we want to start looking at ages. These are below objective on the ages. That should be between 15 and 20%. They're all below 15. And so the options, except for those two new hunts, are either to maintain or decrease the number of permits. Those top two units, this Chalk Creek Camas has been a combined unit in the northern region. We had quite a bit of concern about depredation on the Chalk Creek unit, sheep primarily. And so what we'd like to do is manage those as separate units. So we're proposing to split that unit in two. Chalk Creek would be managed as a harvest objective unit with 15 permits, and Camas as a limited entry unit with 5. That combined unit last year had 12 total permits, so it's an increase overall, but they've kind of divided out how they're splitting that up. And then a reduction on the Plateau Fish Lake. So again, they need, did I say increase? Maintain or decrease are the options. This next category, again, they're meeting their females in the harvest objective, and they're also meeting their age objective. They're right in the slot. And so these units, the plan leaves up to the biologist's discretion, what they want to do with permits there, depending on what they think, what their local population is doing. So here we're recommending an increase on Pine Valley South from 12 to 13. a decrease on the southwest manti from 18 to 15, and changing that unit to a limited entry from a split unit. This category, they're meeting their females in the quota, but they're exceeding their age objective. And so in these instances, the option is to either maintain the number of permits or increase the number of permits, because they're exceeding that age objective. So you can see the recommended changes there in yellow. There are several units in the state where we don't harvest a lot of mountain lions, and so the sample size is so low that the percentages are meaningless. They can, you know, you add one female and it can change by as much as 10%. And so in those instances, the biologist's discretion is in play too. They need to know their unit and figure out what's going on and then make a recommendation based on that, because the metrics are tough just because of the low sample size. So you'll see the quotas or permits here. But the Ponsagant's one example where they only harvested one lion last year, and so over 3 years they're just not getting the cutoff. I use is 12. If it's less than 12 lions over 3 years, it falls into this category. We have four units in the state where these are desert units, where bighorn sheep are the primary large game prey base. There aren't very many, if any, mule deer to speak of. And so if a lion keys in on bighorns, they can, again, do a lot of damage in a short amount of time. And bighorn really are the primary prey base out there. So these units are identified as unlimited units, so there's no limit on the number of permits that can be issued out there, and those units stay open year-round. I thought, just so everybody has a frame of reference, that the last 2 years of harvest on those units, you can see is low. We don't take a lot of mountain lions. There just aren't a lot of mountain lions out there, but we do want to make sure that those numbers stay low, because those big bighorn sheep populations are pretty vulnerable. That's all the unit stuff. Just quickly, this is kind of how things split out between harvest objective and limited entry or split strategies over time. You can see that's changed. It's been, last year we have a few more limited entry or split season opportunities this year than last. A three-year recommendation cycle. We did this with bear. With these species, harvest numbers are relatively low, and we run the risk when we try to back calculate these population estimates of confounding that data by increasing permits. It makes it look like a population may be increasing. It can make it look like a population is increasing when it's not. And so we're proposing that we go to a three-year cycle. We do predator management plans on three-year cycle, so this would marry up with those. If we implemented those, we'd wait 3 years, we'd see where we were, and then come back and make recommendations based on the previous 3 years of data. We need to have a little bit of a safety valve, though, and this is, again, what we did with bear. If we see something in that interim that looks either detrimental to the prey base or to the lion population, we'd be able to bring that unit back through the process and recommend a change that the Wildlife Board could change midstream. But the objective would be to set permits, remain at that level for 3 years, and then evaluate at the end of that cycle. Season dates, these are mostly adjusted for the calendar year, so these are the same as last year, just adjusting the dates for the years. There's one change here. We're recommending on the La Salle and San Juan Mountains, no dogs between September 14th and 22nd. We currently have a restriction on dogs for the bear season out there. We're just trying to be consistent. You know, if you can't chase bears with dogs. You probably shouldn't be out there with dogs chasing lions either. Makes it a little easier on our enforcement folks. So I wanted to take a minute to talk about livestock depredation. One of the challenges with having a large predator out there on the landscape is that they come into conflict with our producers. And so I wanted to show you a little bit of data with regards to that. This is since 2001. These are the incidences of livestock depredation by cougars. So an incident would be a producer finds a dead animal, calls wildlife services. Typically, that government trapper will come out and confirm whether that's a lion kill or some other cause of mortality. And if they determine that it was a lion, then it would be counted as an incident. So that's what we're measuring here, the number of those per year. And then the blue line below that are the number of mountain lions that were removed as a result of those incidences. And so this is mainly just to kind of show trend over time, and what, especially over the last little while, we've seen quite a steep increase over the last 3 years, but it looks like maybe things are leveling off. We were actually down overall last year. Actually, I take it back, overall, including bears, but lions were still slightly more than they were the year before. This is sort of the same thing, but this shows the value. So this is we compensate producers for confirmed losses to lions at the market value. And so that's what these are. These are market value over time and how that's compared since 2001. Total losses, again, of confirmed animals that we pay for. This doesn't include anything that's unconfirmed or just doesn't show up at the end of the season. Producers do have some options under our rule. They, within 72 hours of a depredation incident, they have the ability to remove, to try to remove the lion that did the damage. They just need to contact us if they actually remove the lion. This would include calling wildlife services in to help them with that. They have a 72-hour window to just go handle it. They also have the option in our rule to receive depredation permits if there's a chronic depredation system, chronic incidences over time. So if they're losing sheep, for example, year after year after year, we can issue a landowner or a producer depredation tags to try to target that specific lion or lions that's causing the damage. They can do this outside of the 72-hour window. They can even do some control work before they bring their animals onto the mountain if they're having chronic problems. And that's something they can work with their regional biologist on. I mentioned wildlife services assistance. That's by and large the way most of these are handled, with the help of wildlife services and their personnel. And then finally, we do compensate for confirmed losses. We increased the budget this year. The last couple of years we've had to prorate. This year we didn't do that. We actually increased the amount in that budget, and that budget's increased moving forward too. So we're hoping we're not going to have to prorate, at least. The people will get compensated the full amount of the animals that are confirmed lost to lions. And to bears, too, for that matter. Finally, two rule changes. The first is kind of a housekeeping change. It's just we made some changes in the big game rule to the legal weapons. And this pertains to archery equipment, crossbows, and air bows. And I'm sure you remember that discussion. We're just making them the same. So if you legal weapons for big game or legal weapons for mountain lions. And then finally, we're recommending that we require mountain lion hunters to provide us with a GPS or a location. It doesn't have to be GPS, but a location of the kill when they bring their lion in and turn it in and report it. We want to start building a geo database of where these of where the lions are actually being taken, and we feel like that'll inform our management strategies moving forward if we know where those animals are being taken across the landscape. A couple of little FYI information, maybe fun stuff. We're currently working with Utah State University and the National Wildlife Research Center out of Logan and on a cougar study. We're looking at several things. One, the first thing is we want to try and see if we can come up with a better model to model trend. So we're looking at female survivorship and kitten survival. We're doing this on three units, on the cache, the manti, and the bookcliffs. We're also interested in interactions at prey sites. And so there's just a couple things from that. This is early days. We just caught these lions this past winter. But this is a lion on the cache. I don't know if you can see that, but anyway, this is Bear Lake. This little you'll see when it starts moving. This is one of our collared lions. So she was caught, if you're familiar with the area, in Hodges Canyon, just west of Bear Lake in December. This is the first part of December. There it is. Right after she was caught, she moved over to Blacksmith Fork, just by Hardware Ranch above Cache Valley, and she spent the entire winter in Blacksmith Fork. And then this spring, she left. She moved all the way down to I-80. That's her crossing I-80 at Echo. That's on the Uintas. And as of 2 or 3 weeks ago, she was south of the Uintas, almost into the basin. So this is an outlier. We have 13 animals on the air. Two of them have done over 180-mile movements, one way out into Colorado, came back, and this one. And so we knew this occurred. We knew there's always these kind of transient lions, but we actually caught a couple of them. It's pretty amazing to see the amount of ground that they can cover. This is, you know, when we talk about genetic variability, this is a good sign. We've got connectivity, and those animals are able to move and interact. But it also, you know, we'll see, again, this is one lion, one winter. So we'll see how things pan out in the future, but they definitely are interesting things to look at. And then the last thing, I talked about interactions at prey sites. This is a collared lion that out on the book cliffs. Some of you may have seen this. We posted it on our Instagram and Facebook. But so when the researcher detects a cluster of points where lions spent 6 or more hours in a spot, they'll go out and set up a camera if they find a kill that looks like the lion might return to. This is a mule deer under a bunch of litter that's leaves and sticks that's cached. So this is, you know, just after 2 o'clock in the morning. She comes back and pulls that deer out of there. Pulls it off camera, of course. So she just snags it. So we were pretty bummed when we saw that clip. Oh, great, now we don't get to see. But then the next night at 9:40, this guy shows up, or gal, I can't tell. But you can see it's checking out where that lion had rubbed. And the researcher said she thought she rubbed her head on that branch, too, when she was putting the camera up. So the bear was really helpful. It went and got it and brought it back in front of the camera.
Oh, thank you.
Yeah, I know. Yeah, exactly right. So that bear, this is now it's midnight, so he's been there. He's been there since about 10, so he's been there 2 or 3 hours utilizing that kill. And then like clockwork, just after 2 in the morning, here comes our lion again. And you can tell she's really vigilant. She knows something's up. So that's 2:15. and then at about 30 minutes later, the bear's back. So again, one lion, one instance, but these are the kind of things we're curious about, and some of the stuff that study's already yielding just about 8 months into it. So this will be really, really neat to see how that footage comes back and what's going on when lions make kills and what other animals might or might not be utilizing it. And that's it. That's all I have. Thank you.
Thanks, Darren. That was a really good presentation. I think you had it well organized. So we'll do questions from the rack. Before I turn it over to that, we only have, I believe, one comment card right now, correct? We have quite a few people here. I would hope you take the opportunity to comment if you're here. I think you came to have opinions, so we'd encourage you to hand those comment cards in, and we'll turn it over to the rack for questions. I'm glad to see there's some cards popping up. Good. Go ahead, Tammy.
You got questions? All right. So some of your numbers, you know, obviously have increased, and that's part of your recommendations. My question is, have you, of course, because of social media and the news and whatever, you see a lot of that in the news on the urban interface?
Yeah.
Are you having an increase of that, or it's just more?
We had quite an increase in the central region over the winter, and they're primarily, you know, yearling males probably dispersing. But they really scrambled this winter to handle lions showing up in town. That was an unusual. It was, we ran the numbers. It's not historically more than usual, but it's, you know, it was a high year for that kind of thing. Kevin, maybe.
We have really good lions in the southern region, Tammy. We had a young one show up in somebody's backyard in Cedar City, and so we were scrambling. It was a hard place to try to do anything with because of fences and yards and no place to get dogs. And so that lion took care of itself and was hit on I-15 the following night. So he was just took care of himself.
So the answer, yeah, I mean, overall, it seems like we've definitely seen more of that.
Go ahead, Verl. Then we'll come back. Bart.
So on this, the depredation permits that you can give out, how many have you been given out? Is that something that's taken advantage of quite a bit? Or?
Right. It depends on the region. Some producers have used that quite a bit. Others haven't. But it's an option. So if producers want to do that, they just need to get with their local biologist. And again, it needs to be chronic, and we'll usually limit it. What we want to do is catch the animal that's doing the damage. And so we'll try and focus on an area. But yeah, they can contact their biologist and work through that.
Okay. Bart, go ahead.
So I understand, you know, in the management plan it says that, you know, to facilitate or to help mule deer populations, mm-hmm. you know, predator management is a method.
Right.
But it says in the plan also that it's very minor, its impact. The bigger factor really is winter survivorship,
right.
Habitat quality, things like that. So when do you ramp this up, or when do you ramp up habitat management?
I mean, right.
Are those things
there
that are
certain criteria. So we look at where the population is in relation to its management objective. We also look at adult survivorship. At the time the plan was written, let me put it this way. We've actually recently gotten a lot more data from our callers on big game than we had at the time. And so, you know, that group was trying to figure out a way to get at that. You know, when is predator management going to be effective? And sometimes it's not. You know, if it's, you need to determine what's limiting your population, and that's what we ask our biologists to do. They have the advantage now on several units of having a lot of cause-specific mortality data, and so the plan, you know, runs through 2025, but with a 5-year evaluation period, And so it's actually timely. You know, we probably want to start looking at some of that stuff. So we have seen on some units deer that are in good body condition entering the winter with low overwinter mortality and high lion-specific adult mortality. And those types of units would probably argue more for a predator management type of strategy. Bighorn are a little bit different situation, but for deer, you're right. The literature shows that a lot of times, especially for a winter limited population, that predator management is probably not going to be a panacea in terms of growing a herd. It can suppress a herd, and so I'm really excited about this, all this cause-specific stuff we've got. I think we'll actually be able to tweak how we determine whether predator management would be effective using that data. So we're looking at that.
All right, thanks.
Craig?
My question's on pursuit permits. If you buy one, you pretty well go any of the units, whether it's split or harvest, objective, or is there any thought of maybe changing that? And the reason I ask that is the houndsman I've talked to, sometimes it gets a little crowded in some areas. So.
Yeah, we haven't had much discussion on that, but we... With regards to lion, we have had on some units we've had some concerns about numbers with regard to bear hunting, and primarily in the spring. But we're always open to conversations, but we haven't had a lot of discussion about it. At least I haven't. It could have happened in the past, but I'm not aware of it.
Darren, I have a question on the predator management areas. What's our sideboards of the increases we can do on cougar permits? So my question really relates to the Stansberry.
Right.
And my understanding is that the cougars are significantly impacting those sheep.
Yeah, so
we're doubling the tags. Is that the limit?
The limit in the plan is under predator management, the maximum you can increase in a year is 100%. So we have increased it the maximum.
Okay, that's interesting. I'm surprised we had a limit on predator management.
So. Yeah, it's in there.
Okay. Go ahead, Barb.
I think I might have missed it. So for the areas where we're increasing in, your recommendation is that this will be a three-year plan.
Right.
So will those increases be effective the whole three years or just for this year?
We would set it where it is this year if the board approves it. And the objective would be to remain there for 3 years, look at the last 3 years, make adjustments accordingly, and then move forward for the next 3 years. And so, again, with managing these types of animals, being really schizophrenic year to year about how you adjust permits, it may be counterproductive, and we feel like biologically it makes more sense to take it in three-year chunks.
Any other questions from the REC?
So bear with me as there will be a question at the end of this.
Okay.
So I've had first, the video was amazing and the presentation.
Cool, huh?
There was a lot of amazing information there. I've been contacted. Obviously, I live on the Ponceyon, and I've been contacted by quite a few individuals down there. I know we just changed from the split to the split this last year, and there was a lot of concern, and I'll be honest, I didn't quite understand it until we saw the harvest. There was only one lion that was harvested in that, and so living right there, I can totally understand, especially changing to the split. The whole motivation behind that was to increase harvest, and so there's quite a bit of pressure right now to change that back.
Right.
And I know that they've contacted, many of the houndsmen in the area, the sportsmen. Again, I'm getting this. The question is, if that were proposal was made from the RAC this evening to change that back, would that be supported by the division?
Let me tell you why we did it the way we did, or do you know, Riley?
I do know why we did it that way, and again, I understand that a lot of the a lot of what we deal with is social.
Right.
A lot of what we deal with is biology. And so obviously this one is somewhere in the middle because we have low harvest. I mean, we don't even have any numbers because the harvest was so low, so we don't have any, it's hard to get any projections and anything. And so coming from the sportsman's side with the information that's coming, I mean, I am inclined to support them and say, we want to do that. The question would be, would the divisions support that?
Let me say this. So we already had two racks, and this didn't come up, but I wouldn't say that we'd oppose that. I think the hunt strategy is largely social. Just for the new members, you know, the reason that we propose the split is that we've consistently had low cougar harvest on the Ponce. We have some concerns about the mule deer population down there. With the harvest objective, it's open to anybody who wants to hunt, which is probably why the houndsman would like to see it go back to that. It also doesn't require a person to draw a permit, so if someone knew how to hunt that unit, they could hunt it year after year. The reason that we recommended a split is that first part of the season would be limited entry, and a person, that would be the only option. They, if they drew that tag, they'd have to hunt the Ponsagon during the winter, most of the winter, until February. That's been in place for 1 year. Our hope was that we would see an increase in harvest. We haven't in the first year. And so I'll let the region speak to this, but I think my preference would be to let it play out a little bit longer and see if that strategy works. But again, if the RAC wanted to recommend harvest objective, and you know, it's something we can live with, and biologically, I don't know that it certainly isn't concerning. But I don't know if you want to speak to that a little bit?
Did I do okay?
Well, that's good. I just echo what Darren said. The main reason we decided to keep it with the split unit is that 1 year isn't too great of a sample. I don't want to get 6 years down the road and we're still having low harvest at harvest objective and think, you know, what if we try split unit again? We only tried it for 1 year last time. Maybe we just didn't give it enough time. So my recommendation would be to keep it at that split unit to give it a chance and see if we do see increased harvest or not. So, very good.
Go ahead, Barb.
I have had some, you know, constituents reach out to me, mm-hmm. you know, expressing concerns as I'm the non-consumptive rep. So
yeah.
I get, you know, those concerns voiced to me. One of them was about, you know, if you increase the larger, you know, take for toms, and that can create some social havoc among the younger ones, and you may get more predation, or as they're trying to kind of figure out their ranges.
Right.
How would you manage that? Because that just seems you'd then go to more wildlife services.
Yeah. The plan is written in a way to try to address that concern, and that is with that age objective. And so, you know, unless it's being managed to try to actually lower the population, then we're looking at having, you know, a low number of females taken, and then maintaining enough older age animals in the area to try to prevent some of that.
Mm-hmm.
My understanding of the literature is that there have been some studies out of Washington that do show a correlation between increased take of older age males and increased depredation in the following year, but it's correlation. And I always, you know, I just caution people, you know, correlation is not causation.
It's not causation.
I'm not aware, and maybe Kevin, if you are, tell me, but I'm not aware of anything where they've been able to make that hard tie between social chaos and an increased. It's a theory based on what we know about cougar biology that was put forth based on those results, and that it makes a certain amount of sense biologically that if you have younger males tend to set up larger territories that overlap, whereas bigger males are more dominant, they tend to set up smaller territories and keep other males out. But making that tie to, mm-hmm. you know, a hard, you know, A plus B equals C has, as far as I know, not been established. But
okay. And the other question that he had, It's actually more, I guess, more of a hunter's question than it.
Okay.
But it's, you know, the increased take, his concern was, you know, is this just to, are we going to keep those additional permits within the state, or are they going to go out? Because he thinks that should be something where, you know, it should be, okay, more of those should go to Utah hunters than be sold, right, to, you know, game operations.
For limited entry hunts, there's a 10% split, you, okay, know, but for the harvest objective, yeah, it's anybody can buy those. So that's probably a discussion for future plan discussions. I know there's some interest in looking at that. So yeah,
okay,
go ahead.
And Darren, I don't remember, with harvest objective, is the non-resident price higher?
It's higher.
So they pay a higher price for, yeah, for a harvest objective tag, and then on the limited entry, it's 90% residents, 10% non-residents.
Right.
So there is some balance there, but it's really not, we're not setting any percentages.
Any other questions from the RAC? Okay, let's turn to questions from the public, and then we'll go to comments from the public.
Scott Stubbs, Stubbs Livestock. Do you have any data on these GPS collars on the depredation on those?
Yeah, so this is the first summer. We have a couple of collared lions on the cache that they've been taking some sheep. So we're working with those producers up there. They're interested in looking at how many we detect that they don't detect. And so we've been working with Wildlife Services and with those producers to see if we can start looking at that. It's a little sample size, and my understanding is that the wool growers are interested in maybe looking at something more rigorous on that.
So how many to date have been taken? The sheep went on the 10th of July.
Yeah.
I mean, I know these answers, but...
Right, yeah, the two, I don't know if I'm totally up to date. My understanding is the two collared ones had, I think one has taken 8 so far, and she's got a couple of kittens with her, and the other one, I want to say 6, right? 6 or 7, yeah. So it's ongoing, obviously, but yeah.
And yet there's 4 bunches of sheep within 5 miles.
Yeah.
A guy in the last 3 days has lost 11, not one of them being the collared one.
Right, yeah, there's other
lines. They're pretty close, is,
yeah,
my point.
Yeah, they took one tom 2 weeks ago. They took a female with a yearling in one of the herds just over the weekend. So they've been taking some lions, and they're not collared ones.
So do you have any numbers on how many, like from our perspective, we figure if they kill one that we find,
right,
they probably kill 2 more.
That's,
you got any numbers on your deer
or
anything?
That's what we're looking at. So I keep looking at Chad because they're working with those guys. I want to say, well, maybe you can answer, Chad. Do you know how many you guys have detected, or the herders have found, compared to those collar? Do you have that number?
Not off the top of my head. I know, okay, the female, the yearling that was taken recently, I think one producer was up to 18 before they took that.
So you have to look at the ones with collars on it.
Yeah.
My understanding is that the ones that the herders found, that one of the collared cats took, I want to say it was maybe a couple, and then these others, you know, the balance were found by the researcher when she went and looked at a kill site. So,
thank you.
So there's a disparity in.
Any other questions from the public?
I'm Jared Higgins. I'm representing myself. I have a question on your management plan is based off of age, 50% of the plan. Is that correct?
The most important metric is that female's in the harvest.
Female harvest.
And then if, depending on where you fall in the management strategy for the unit, then you would look at age secondarily. But yeah, that's the second criteria.
So how are we obtaining those ages?
We pull teeth, and then the teeth are sliced by a lab and dyed, and then we count the rings.
Okay, and of those teeth, how many of those are undeterminable? Do you have that data?
I don't have a figure on that.
Somebody threw a figure out to me that it was around 50%.
No, it's not that
undetermined on that, and so that was concerning to me.
Right.
And I was wondering if there's any steps being taken to find some better data to age these cats, because I've had some personal experiences with some cats that I've checked in that, you know,
right,
they were old cats, and they come back as a 2-year-old cat, or, you know,
most
skewed data.
Most of them will get an age. There's some, maybe, I don't want to pull numbers out of my hat, but a small percentage, they'll give you a window between 3 and 5, for example. Mm-hmm. And then there's a smaller number that they just can't tell. And it's because they're predators. They don't have that lean time like ungulates do. And so sometimes those rings don't show up as good as they would with a deer or something.
So are there any other ways that we could pursue into aging these better?
That's the best way. You know, I'm open to ideas, but that's really the best way to get at it. Yeah.
Okay. Thank you.
Any more questions? Okay, we'll go to the comment cards. Wade Garrett, we have you first, and then Scott Tubbs would follow Wade.
Stubbs,
sorry.
Wade Garrett, representing Utah Farm Bureau. I saw a wolf collar similar to your cat, Darren, only he did 80 miles an hour down I-80 and ended up at a truck stop in Denver. I don't know the whole story behind that. But. So my comment is Utah Farm Bureau. I represent Utah Farm Bureau, and we support the plan. Darren and I have met with some of our other folks at Utah Farm Bureau, and we're looking for ways to take care of deprivating cats that they're getting to our sheep herds, mostly sheep, some cattle, but majority sheep, and looking at ways to control those. And we've talked about some ways. Part of those you talked about, and some are maybe getting creative as we go forward, but probably aren't a place to discuss tonight. But take care of those cats. One of our concerns, and not to place blame, and Chad is here, but we have more cat killing, less being taken by wildlife services. We need to figure out how to get rid of the cats that killed, whatever way that is. So being creative, working with the houndsman that maybe can come in and help. Maybe going into November to chase a cat that we haven't caught yet, doing early and late work, which some of that I think is already at the discretion and we can use. But those would be my comments, is to make sure we're taking care of cats that are they're killing livestock. And then the second is work on that study that I think Utah Farm Bureau would even be willing to help with the study to figure out the percentage of what we're not finding, and then ways to make sure we're confirming kills, better ways working with all the agencies. So that'd be my comments.
After Scott, we'd have Dustin Clark.
Scott Stubbs, Stubbs Livestock. So this study that's going on, this came up at the Wool Growers Convention yesterday, and the wool growers all voted to try and come up with money, hoping that maybe the Farm Bureau is going to participate, hoping maybe the SFW, some other things would make sure and pay those producers, because those producers said we want this study to be successful, because they could kill those collared cats. They know where they are. Even I could find them. And anyway, I admire those producers trying to help figure these things out, because we want there to be hunting. We're not trying, but we don't like them killing us. And so we would like to know how to take care of the problem, and we feel like these things will grow into something more. And they're putting together money to try and match one that they don't find for every one they find. And by the way, you know, when you have a cat kill, you don't necessarily have time to get animal damage there and everything. I mean, we're not getting them reported even when we found. They're too old. They're hard to tell what's happened. Anyway, I support the division, and I just want you to know that the wool growers are trying hard because they're losing animals, but they want this study to be successful. Thanks.
After Dustin, Hunter Meekum.
I'm Dustin Clark, just representing myself. So I want to see if there's something that we can do to address the check-in time on lions. Right now it's 48 hours, and I want to know why it's that long. Is there reasons we don't know as far as that goes? Because we had, was it six units that were over-harvested this year?
Yeah. There's always, it's not over the same unit, but yeah.
But there...
The reason that we give 48 hours is because people are sometimes hunting a weekend and they can't find one of us to come and check it with. Having said that, we are working on ways to get more real time with that. And it would look, one of the things that's going to play into this is this location data. But moving forward, eventually we'd like to get to an electronic format where you'd essentially check your cat at the kill site when it was killed. That'd be real time. We'd know a lion had been harvested, and then when you brought it in, we'd do all the, you know, pull teeth and do all that. But that's similar, something we're going to have to build, so it's going to take a few years.
Similar to the Coyote app.
Right, yeah, it'd be similar to that.
So that's what I was just curious, is if there's something we can do there to increase this. So, and then my next question is on the Dutton. Over the three-year span, it's been 38% female harvest, but yet the age requirement is only at 13. So last year we increased it by two tags to try and reach that harvest, and it still never reached it. So why are we still keeping those tags up higher?
So the main reason we didn't recommend a decrease is that it is still below that 40% threshold.
On the female,
which female harvest.
2%, and this last year's take was 50-50.
Right. Part of it, too, is that we hear a lot from producers on that mountain and about lions, and Wildlife Services gets quite a bit of incidents on that mountain, too.
Okay. And then my next question.
Hunter, we had the 3 minutes.
Okay.
Is up, so.
That was still Scott's timer. I didn't reset it for him.
Oh.
Never mind, Hunter. You got at least 20 seconds left.
Okay. One more comment. If I'm right, the depredated lions don't count towards your percentages.
That's right. It's something a biologist would look at, but they don't. Yeah.
So I would like to see a change that they do. I don't think they should count towards the quota on that unit. I still think that we should be able to harvest the same amount, but I think those, it should be somewhat changed that those, whatever cats are killed, are put in the percentages that are being taken off those units. That's all I have. Thank you.
Jared Higgins and then Jeff Brewer. Sorry, Hunter. I thought.
You're good. He said everything.
You sure, Hunter?
Yeah.
You want to just sit here and listen? All right, Jared Higgins and then Jeff Brewer.
Jared Higgins again. Just want to thank, you know, these guys for everything they do, and their plan looks great. You know, they're doing a great job, and you guys too. Something that I'm noticing, you know, from a outfitter's perspective and from a sportsman's perspective, we don't have any trophy quality, really, of lions anymore, and it's hard to balance that with keeping everybody happy that wants the numbers down. A theory of mine is, you know, if you have one limited entry unit where you can offer some opportunity to the sportsman for a cat that's over 2 years old, that you can actually bring clients in and they can actually take a picture next to it and feel proud that they killed it. You know, there's nothing in the whole southern end of the state, limited entry, with a small amount of tags. They're not growing these cats big anymore. I know that's not even really on the agenda for this, but moving forward, you know, I'd like to see just one unit that we could pick and maybe make into a quality cat hunting unit. You know, you guys don't want to go hunt 2-point bucks, and we don't like to kill year-and-a-half-old, 2-year-old cats. And that's all. Thank you.
All right, after Jeff, we have J.J. Brewer, I believe.
Jeff Brewer, I've been here many times, been in hounds and chased lions for about 36 years. I just wanted to say I represent myself tonight. I'm a member of the Utah Houndsman Association, but we sustain or support the DWR's recommendations. We appreciate Vance locally that he's open with us about numbers and harvest and information. Jim Lamb, I don't know the other young man, but anyway, they've been real good to work with us. So we support the DWR. I don't stand up and say as much as I should. Thank you.
J.J. Brewer, I represent myself, but also I'll begin representing the Utah Houndsman Association. Being a member of that association, we support these recommendations in Southern Utah. Our hats are off. Thank you, guys. I know it's a lot of work. Thank you, Darren, for meeting with us, hearing our voice. So we appreciate that very much, as well as Jared and Hunter being members of that Utah Houndsman Board. And hopefully all these guys are members of the association as well. For myself, thank you, guys. We support you. We're eager more than ever as houndsmen to help. My hats are off to the livestock guys. Thank you. You know, I'd be willing to talk to the Utah Houndsman Board and see if we could come up with some money to help you guys, too. I love to get along and help each other because that's the only way we're going to accomplish a goal in the future, and that's really how it should be done. We're very eager to help livestock guys if we can. I promise you, them gentlemen right there's got, I won't brag on my dogs. And them boys can catch a lion, I guarantee it, in the dirt any time of year. I'll brag on a lot of those guys. So if there's help, I wish we could come up with the correct system to make sure we're getting help where it needs. But again, thank you. We're eager to move forward with lions, and we support the recommendations.
Thank you. Appreciate the comments from the public. Let's turn it over to comments from the rack. Before I open it up, I have a quick comment, and probably the only comment I have on this plan, maybe a concern. And Darren, if you'd maybe even speak to this a little bit. The one concern I have is on that Stansbury unit, where, from my understanding, is we're getting some pretty severe predation on those sheep from cougars. The parameters say we can only double the tags, but that's a low amount of tags on yeah. there. We're going from 3 to 6. You know, a lot of these units have 20 tags on them, 15 tags. So that's a real concern of mine. I wonder if there's any way that you can see to address that, or is that just something we'd have to ask the board to go outside of the parameters and look at it?
There's a couple things we can do as a division. First of all, we manage the plan. And so, you know, we increased sport harvest opportunity on that unit as much as we can under the plan. Having said that, though, we have the option to go outside of sport harvest and use tools like Wildlife Services when we've got lions that are hitting those sheep to go in and do that, and we've done that as well. So we have options, but yeah, the RAC would have to, you can make a recommendation to increase those, and the board would have to consider it, but we're going to stick with the plan. Does that help?
Yeah, that's great. And so my comment to that is I would hate to see Wildlife Services come in and pay someone if we can have people that want to take those. The board can go outside of that plan. So I appreciate that the division can't make that recommendation, but the board surely could. So it may be something we want to consider asking the board to do. Other comments from RAC? Go ahead, Tammy.
It's growling at me again. Really? He saw me coming. Had enough of me last night. I agree, and I think, you know, I think that is a valid concern. It's my understanding that the Central RAC recommended an increase. So I'd be willing to make that recommendation too. Do you have numbers?
So let's hold on just a minute and get the comments done, and then we'll.
Well, I'm just saying I'm supportive of that. So
great. Go ahead, Riley.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I hope I'm not out of line. I'm still a little bit inclined. I've got another text sitting here. Would it be out of line to, just for clarification, before I may or may not make an amendment to a motion or a motion later, to have Wade maybe provide a point of a view from Friends of the Poncegant who may be involved in that? Would that be all right?
Riley, I would be nervous about that with Wade being on the board now.
And that's why I'm asking.
Yeah, let's... You agree, Wade? Yeah, I don't think that's appropriate in an IRAC meeting for Wade to be representing an independent group.
Thank you.
Boy, if we don't have any other comments, this is probably the smoothest cougar rack I've ever been to. Go ahead, Bart.
So I guess the total... This is just a comment for presentations in the future because, you know, we're doing like a, you know, statewide like increase, but we're representing just the southern region, right? So maybe, hey, this is what it is for the state. Here's what it is for our region. I know you can deduce that from the areas, but it would be...
In the last 15 years up until this one, you would have seen that, Bart. Darren made a change this year to try to help with some other issues that we've had.
Oh, okay.
So maybe a combination of both is what we need. So I'll make a note and provide that to the RAC.
And that may just be an issue for the non-consumptive, since I don't go hunting in these areas. So when you say this area, I'm like, well, what's that?
Yeah.
So...
Well,
I'd like to continue the comment on those lines that have been collared. You know, we've been here year after year, and us in the livestock industry have talked about depredation, and so the fact that we finally got some numbers, you know, one line so far has killed 8 sheep, another one 7 to 8, and those are just the two that are collared, and then we've got all these working, all these others that are in the area. So, and every sheep herd's in the state's got that same problem. They don't have collared lion, but they have the same problem. So I'm excited to see this study. It'll bring data on the deer and maybe the bighorn sheep depredation, but what I'm more excited about is what the domestic sheep and domestic livestock is going to come up from this study, and I'd be excited to see more of it, because this is just a drop in the bucket of what's happening out there, and it hasn't been able to be documented until now, and so I'm excited to see that happening, and I can see why the wool growers are wanting to get on board. It's proving what we've been telling you for years, and that's my comment. I'm just glad to see that happening, and like these guys say, we know where the collared lions are, but we're not going to bother them because we want to get this study out and show you what's really happening in real life. Thanks.
Yeah, Verlin, we're excited as well. We've always known that it's an underrepresentation, but we verified is the only way we knew that we could try to be fair. But now that we have the ability to essentially track a lion in real time, we can get to the answer to some of these questions that we've known we were, you know, doing a minimum. You know, we knew it was higher than what we were accounting for, but we didn't know how to get the right answer. And now we finally have some tools that maybe we can start zeroing in on what the reality is. So it's good.
Go ahead, Tammy, and then we'll come to Barbara.
It's my magnetic person. personality. These guys are over here with their magic wand just trying to mess me up. I want to tell the division I'm thankful for the... Thankful, that sounds funny. I appreciate... talking to the bishop here, so I'm trying to be, you know, nice. I appreciate the correlation and the information according to agriculture and that part of it, that segment, because we've missed that part of it for years. And so I think that you guys are really trying really hard to work on that end of it, and we do appreciate it, and we're thankful too.
Yeah, kind of going on the livestock depredation slide. I mean, I thought that was an interesting slide, and I think I may take something away a little bit differently. I mean, we're starting to see, instead of seeing flatlining, you're seeing actually an increase in predation instances based on number of actual wildlife services take. So actually they're killing, if that's a direct correlation, the cats are killing more, is what I see here. Is that an accurate read on that?
I think it's one of many data points we can look at that just, you know, we got that. They're, all the trends point to a growing population.
Yeah, so kind of on that, it's, and again, I'm the non-consumptive ref, but when I look at this, I kind of see, you know, if you're concerned about managing livestock and making minimizing depredation on livestock, that should be important to you. So how do you need to address that? So.
I have one quick comment, Riley, and then I'll give it to you. This comment's for everybody, but Tammy, take note. My comment on the Stansbury with those sheep, it's the exact same situation on the Beaver West. So we're trying to get sheep on there, and they doubled the tags, but it's still a low number, and we may want to look at that and the Stansbury.
I just wanted to also recognize our houndsmen and those from the Utah Trapper Association. You know, many of us have been to quite a few of these meetings in years past, and there's always a great representation, and we appreciate that. That's how this process works. Also, a big thank you to the division. You guys don't get enough credit for what you do. This takes a lot of time. The numbers are solid. I'll be honest in saying that I was a skeptic many years ago of the science behind it, because as a sportsman, we see what we see, and that's reality to us. But there is science. You can see it in the trends. You can see it in the harvests and the end result. And so we do recognize that and appreciate you doing that. Also, I appreciate being able to represent and being able to speak as a voice to the sportsmen in that area, and would continue to ask and thank the rest of the RAC to be able to do that as well. So that's it. Thanks, Brady. Chairman.
Any more comments?
After him.
Go ahead, Gene, and then Bart again.
I'm really impressed with the presentation today and the work that's gone into it. I'm also impressed with the livestock people and the houndsmen and their comments today. I do think that a lot of the age selection and sex selections up to the houndsmen. They run the dogs and they say whether the cat gets shot or they walk away from it. And I appreciate that and what they do. They're a great group, but whatever they tell you, don't ever buy a used pickup from one of them.
Just the final concern that was, you know, raised to me. I understand the importance of minimizing, you know, adverse, you know,
cat, you know, livestock interactions, human interactions. But I was speaking with some professors at USU on this, and one of the concerns they want to make is make sure that we also, when we're thinking about population management, also managing for the health of the cat population, and maybe there's other metrics we could be using besides just take. So I'm not sure what those are. I didn't get down into the weeds in this, but just some things to consider.
Any additional comments? Go ahead, Craig.
I've been really impressed with the tracking deal. I just was thinking about that as this conversation's gone on. They're only killing sheep from June till October. I'd be interested in what those cats are eating the other 7 months out of the year.
I can give you a short list. What's really cool is she's been able to detect things as small, like grouse. She's found grouse. She's found a snowshoe hare. They've been eating a lot of fawns and elk calves on out there. Yeah, so that's a short list. But beavers, porcupines, skunks, all kinds of skunks are particularly fun for the researchers to walk in on some.
All right. Thank you, everyone.
Do you want to summarize the comments?
Yeah, we could summarize the comments here real quick. The public comments.
Utah Farm Bureau.
Utah Farm Bureau supports the plan and wants to continue to help to make sure depredation is being addressed. The wool growers are interested in continuing the support of this research and some positive feedback there to better understand the impact of lions and sheep and hoping to help fund the study. Can we continue to reduce the check-in time to avoid going over quotas? And the division's working on some solutions for that. They want to include depredation harvest in calculating percentages for the plan, so to add the depredation harvest in addition to the take. No trophy lion units in southern Utah, and that's been brought up for the past several years. Utah Houndsman Association supports the recommendations. Rat comments or Stanberry recommendation needs to be increased more than the plan allows, and appreciation for the study to get the data on the livestock depredation. So at this point, we'd entertain a motion.
Did you say Stansberry and Beaver West?
Yeah, Stansberry and Beaver West on that recommendation. Tammy, you ready?
Oh, it's not on. So if I was to make a motion of recommendation with an increase on the Stansberry, or do you need to do a separate thing on that?
So I would recommend that you would make a motion to support the recommendations as presented with the exception of, and then ask for your exceptions.
What he said. Now, I do appreciate all the different groups that were here that are supportive of the proposed plan. So I would recommend that we approve the plan with the exception of the Stansberry, and would like to see a larger increase on that. On Beaver West as well. Someday we'll get on the same page.
And increase them by increase those, do you want to give a number? What are the recommendations on those 2 units now?
Triple.
Six.
I think they're both six. I thought they were both six.
Well, Stansberry's eight.
Stansberry's eight and Beaver's six.
Stansberry West is an increase from 4 to 8. And then Stansberry East was 8, same as last year.
Beaver West was from 3 to 6, right?
Mm. Last year's increase was, so I would increase that as well.
So what if we did 10 and Beaver West 10 and Stansberry 12?
I'd be fine with that.
So let me repeat your motion.
Please do.
The way I heard your motion was you want to make a motion to accept the plan as presented with the exception of Stansberry and Beaver West. We'd ask for the board to consider going outside of the plan with 10 permits on Beaver West and 12 permits on Stansberry due to sheep depredation.
I've just got a question. When the board makes a change like that and the public hasn't had a chance to comment on that, do you normally give them a chance to comment or open that up for comments?
That's a good question, Chad. And that's part of the reason that the board meetings are also an open public meeting, and they take comment there. They take the recommendations from the RAC. They consider that. They also take public comment at that board meeting, and that's the public's opportunity to comment on recommendations that come out of the RAC. Did you get the motion, Denise? Are we clear? Do you want to read it back to us?
So accept the plan as presented with the exception of 10 permits on Stansberry.
Increasing the Stansberry to 10. No, increasing the Stansberry to 12 and Beaver West to 10.
Two. Okay, so we have a motion. Do we have a second?
Second.
Berlin seconds the motion. Any additional discussion? All right, let's take a vote. All in favor?
Eight.
And opposed?
One.
Okay, thank you. Motion passes.
We've got 11 RAC members here, and Braden's not voting, so it should add up to 10.
Should we try this one more time? All in favor?
We only have one vote.
Okay, 9-1. Okay. Thank you. Before we finish it up with other business, I did fail to recognize the board members here. Appreciate them being here. So we have Wade Heaton, Kevin Albrecht, and Donnie Hunter. So appreciate your time and effort in coming here and your service on the board. Also, I just want to make a quick comment, too, that this is one of the better attended Cougar Racks I've been to and also seemed to be very productive. So appreciate your comments. Appreciate your interest in coming. I know most of you come every year, and that's how this process works, so thank you. Any additional business that we have?
Let me respond to a question. So the question about teeth and how accurate the aging is, I texted Randy Larson, who's the professor up at BYU that does all of our aging, and let me just read you his response. He says, we can get an age for almost all of the lions. The problem is they don't have a defined nutritional stress like Darren says, and that's what really gets you good rings for each year. And so the ages for lions aren't nearly as accurate. But he says, that said, he still feels it has a lot of value because that bias is consistent across time. And so it still allows us to track trends. We may not be really accurate on this is a 4-year-old lion and that's a 5-year-old lion, but the bias in the system is consistent. And so if it's going up or down, that should be accurate. Does that help?
That makes a lot of sense.
Okay.
The only additional business I'd have is just a reminder that the next RAC meeting is September 10th in Hurricane, and it's the fishing recommendations and guidebook. And then just a comment, too, where we have a couple new RAC members. I think something important to note, and we haven't had a problem with this in our region, but we do need RAC members at these meetings to have a quorum and to be able to have a vote or a voice at the board meeting. Sometimes that fishing one is the one where we get short on people attending. So if you can put that in your calendars, we'd appreciate it.
And our required number now with 12 is we need to have 7 to have a quorum. We have to have 50% plus 1.
So here's the full disclaimer. I will not be there for sure. I'm going to be in D.C.
we may have
so
just
everybody
lost our
else
quorum.
Better be there.
Hey, thank you. Meeting adjourned.